It's the Kim Monson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
I find that it takes work to get your brain around these ideas, and it takes work to engage in these conversations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
With what is happening down at the State House, I used to think that it was above my pay grade to read the legislation, and it's not.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
I see big danger in as much as we will be giving an unelected bureaucrat the power to make rules about what we inject into our body.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation. I am Kim Monson. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Monson, MONSON.com. Podcasts, recaps of the shows can be found there. All kinds of great information. Our writer circle, all those op-eds are there as well. We've got a great show planned for you today. We'll go through some headlines during this first segment. Second segment, we'll talk with Dr. Jill Vecchio about the COVID-19 Wuhan virus modeling and reporting. And then in segments 3 and 4, retired Army Lieutenant Colonel Timothy Lupfer has written a book, a very important book, Leadership, Tough Love, Examining Leaders Through the Lens of Reality. And given what is our country is going through right now, we're looking at leadership and what does that mean exactly. And so that's going to be a great conversation as well. Be sure and check out our headlines for hope. Our story from yesterday is Dale Carnegie. Really an interesting guy. He was an American writer and lecturer, the developer of courses in self-improvement, salesmanship, corporate training, public speaking, and interpersonal skills. He was born into a poverty on a farm in Missouri. He was the author of How to Win Friends and Influence People, which was a bestseller that remains popular today. He also wrote How to Stop Worrying and Start Living, Link in the Unknown, and several other books. He was born in 1888, and he died in 1955. And that gets us right into our quote for today, and that is, don't be afraid to give your best to seemingly small jobs. Every time you conquer one, it makes you stronger. If you do the little jobs well, the big ones will tend to take care of themselves. That's Dale Carnegie. And producer Steve, I think that is, you know what? You are a person who you strive for excellence in every job that you do. And I think that goes right to you, producer Steve.
If you really believe that, you should see some of my carpentry efforts.
Well, it doesn't say that you're an expert at everything, but you always give your best to the seemingly small jobs on that. So to that, thank you to you, Steve, and to the team, to Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie, and also you listeners. You're treasured, you're valued. Strive for excellence. You have a purpose today while we're on this COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption. Be sure to do something industrious and productive today and take care of your heart, your soul, and your mind and your body. I sound like a mom on that, don't I, Steve?
Yeah, but you have lots of practice.
I do have a lot of practice. The other thing is make your bed every day. That way you know that you have accomplished something. So as we look at these issues, we look at them as freedom versus force, force versus freedom, or freedom versus fear, fear versus freedom. There's a lot of that going around. And because of that fear, we've seen PBIs, politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties step in and take that fear and use all kinds of force to control our lives right now. And so it was pretty amazing yesterday. Steve, did you happen to see what happened in Michigan?
I did, and I love it.
Yeah. What happened was, and you talk about overreach, that governor there, she's even gone to the rules, regulations, whatever, executive order, that like at a Target or a Walmart, the aisles that she deems is not essential to have those taped off so that people cannot shop there. Can you believe? She even said people cannot buy seeds for their gardens. I mean, this is the time to be starting to plant your garden, and people need something to do. And her overreach there is astonishing. So what happened, I think it was called Operation Gridlock, thousands of Michiganers got in their cars and they went down to the Capitol. And they drove around, they did a protest, and it just did my heart good to see that, to see people say, wait a minute, we are freedom people, and if we choose to do so, we can go and assemble. And it was something else, Steve.
I think where she really crossed the line was with that seeds and plants and gardening tools thing. she's going after now. People, you know, want to look at this situation and say, okay, I'll do what I need to do. But more importantly, I want to do what I can do to help myself. And she's directly challenging that. And it's like, okay, now you really crossed the line here.
She has definitely crossed the line there. And we're seeing that across the board. And, you know, when we were talking with Matt Durkin yesterday, he said this puts police officers in a really difficult situation. And we saw that up in Steamboat. Apparently, a guy invited some friends over to his apartment and his roommate. And, you know, I guess you have to respect the roommate as well. But the roommate reported them, and the police in Steamboat came and arrested three of them and made them spend the night in jail. Now, the right to assemble is in the Constitution. And I think we're going to start to see people start to push back on this. There was a really excellent piece in Reason. This was by Ira Stoll. He said, people, not politicians, will decide when the coronavirus shutdown ends. It says, in the fight between the governors and President Trump over who has the authority to reopen America, the politicians have it wrong. It's not the politicians who have the power to reopen America, or at least the parts that are now closed. It's individuals, families, businesses, and religious organizations. And he went on to say, children want to see their parents. Parents want to see their children. Grandparents want to see their grandchildren. People who haven't yet started families want to go on in-person dates. Business owners want to make money. They've invested their labor, their capital, and their reputation in our stores, our restaurants, our factories, and offices that are now empty or idle. And I think that we are getting to a point now where we're seeing the reporting. When we talk with Jill in the second segment about the reporting and the modeling, some of this modeling that they used as a basis to shut down our economy, basically, looks like it was incorrect. And to actually go and shut down a complete economy, there may be 37 million people that may be unemployed. What that does to the psyche, what that does to people's their dignity, the ability to go out and take care of themselves, there's going to be consequences to that that may be significantly greater in the toll on society than what COVID-19 is. Patty had pulled the recent statistics, and so there's about 620,000 cases in the United States, and about 28,000 deaths, and each person certainly is valuable. But here in Colorado, there's 8,280 cases, 1,636 are hospitalized, and 357 deaths. And as of yesterday, when this new COVID-19 data was released, this is the number of deaths in nursing homes: 176, which is 49% of the state's total deaths to date. And at present, 78% of hospital deaths are age 70 and above. And as we say, Steve, each life is treasured and valued, but it is also important to understand some of the statistics on this, and also on the reporting. When we heard Dr. Birx talk about comorbidity, it took me a while to kind of get my brain around that. But that, and my understanding is that means that there's, you know, several different things going on with that person from a health standpoint, which probably contributed to their death. I'm also understanding that there may be additional funding if the reporting is said that it is a COVID-19 death. And so I think that we need to be somewhat suspect on some of these things, and go to what Rudyard Kipling says. He says, I keep six honest serving men. They taught me all I knew. Their names are what and why and when and how and where and who. So to blindly take the experts' information on this without asking questions is just dumb. You know what? We need to be asking questions on that, Steve.
It's just dumb, but unfortunately, it's the mode, I think, that we find ourselves in. In the last 25, 30 years or so, we've become, you know, we anesthetized to really being, you know, curious. And that quote by Kipling is just, you know, it says it all.
Well, and, you know, sometimes I wonder if this is a grand experiment also by quote-unquote experts, or these people that want to actually be forcing everyday people to do certain things. So, we, you know, in socialism, there's the haves and the have-nots. or the elites and everybody else. And so it's like, I wonder what we could do. Could we possibly, oh, I remember the whole bike helmet thing. Make everybody wear a bike helmet, you know, and if you didn't wear a bike helmet, then, you know, you were certainly not trying to be a safe person. I also question, though, Steve, we are so concerned about wearing bike helmets to keep our heads safe. What about all the stuff that we put in our brains? We want to make sure that we are putting in good thoughts, that we are striving for excellence, we're reading great books, instead of a bunch of junk that some of these kids are getting indoctrinated in our education system. What do you think?
Well, this is a bad play on words. It's a no-brainer. Yes, they are absolutely... The things that I see that are out there, and I kind of, there's certain individuals that kind of, they've got my attention on Facebook, and I hate to keep going to that, but I'm watching, and it's like, really? This is what you're interested in? This is what you think is important? Anyway, and then I have to consider their age. You know, they just turned 20, or they're just 21. I'll say, okay, you know, let maturity do its thing, but you're absolutely right.
We have to be careful about what we put in our brains, but can we get everybody to wear helmets? Can we get everybody to stand in line at the airport under the guise that we're trying to keep everybody safe? Now, can we shut down a complete economy and have people wear masks and tattle on each other and arrest people for getting together? Just how much will society take? And that's why I thought it was so important what happened in Michigan. And it sounds like there may be some kind of organization for this, for doing something this Sunday at 1 o'clock. So we'll try to keep an eye on that and let you know about that. We're going to go to break here in just a moment, but I have some new information on Hooters that I thought that you might want to know about. They have 5 Hooters Colorado locations. Excuse me. And they're accepting to-go orders. The orders can be placed at order.hooters.com or called into the stores. They have curbside service option available at all 5 Hooters locations. Wednesdays are wing day. You buy 20 breaded or 20 wings, any of them, and you get 10 for free. And they have lunch specials every day. Kids eat free all day, every day with the purchase of adult entrees. And their hours are Sunday through Wednesday, 11:30 to 8:30 p.m., and Thursday through Saturday, 11:30 to 9. You can go to my website for more information. And again, that is order.hooters.com. They are valued partners of mine, and so would greatly appreciate you getting some to-go or take-out there. And we're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Dr. Jill Vecchio.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website, Kim Munson. That's MONSON.com. Podcasts and recaps of the show can be found there, as well as our Writer Circle op-eds. Dr. Jill Vecchio, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kim. I hope everybody's safe out there.
Me too. I actually, my exercise consists of going downstairs and then going back upstairs. I mean, that's about all I get done from exercise standpoint right now. Great to have you on the show.
And,
yeah, the other thing is
everybody, happy day after not having to pay your taxes day.
Yeah, I thought about that. Yeah, that's in just a few months.
I do TurboTax, but just so in case people don't know, if you're expecting to get a stimulus, you know, one of those like the stimulus or support checks, look at your tax situation. If you made less money in 2019 or expect to have less tax due in 2019 than in 2018, go ahead and file your taxes. You don't have to pay anything if you owe it. So go ahead and file your taxes, because that's how they calculate how much money you get from your check.
Oh,
it's based okay. on either 2008 or 18 or 2019 in like adjusted gross income.
Okay.
So look at your tax situation, everybody, and see which one is lower. If you haven't filed 2019, then they'll use 2018 numbers. That's my understanding.
Okay.
Just wanted to throw it out there.
That's another nugget of information from Dr. Jill Vecchio. And as many of you know, she is one of the few people in the country that actually read the complete Affordable Care or Unaffordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. And Jill, I wanted to talk with you a little bit about today about this modeling and reporting on COVID-19, the Wuhan virus, because we've been starting to look at some numbers. Patty put together some information. Another listener, I'd sent some information over to you. And there's some things that are starting to raise some questions. What's your thoughts?
Well, on the modeling, it's kind of like garbage in, garbage out. That's a big saying in medicine. So you can't expect to get the right answer if you don't ask the right questions. And if you don't put in the right information, you can't expect to get a useful model. And there are a whole bunch of different organizations doing modeling on this. And they made a bunch of assumptions. I mean, the modeling has just been really ridiculous and virtually useless.
But Jill, we have used that to shut down our economy. I think it's important that people understand that. You know what?
The modeling in general has been a mess over a whole bunch of things. So that was part of the modeling was part of the justification for Obamacare. Everybody's going to save $2,500, right?
Right.
So it's kind of like modeling on a government scale. They can make anything happen in a model. It's like don't just trust the headlines on some medical study. You have to look at the guts of it and see how it was done, what the assumptions were. Just because it says a medical study says that coffee cures cancer, don't go around and start drinking 8 cups of coffee a day. I mean, you really have to question the motivation behind whoever's doing what they're doing. And what did the modeling accomplish? Scared the hell out of everybody, got them to stay at home, and then it started to – what we saw initially was everybody is social distancing, you're taking it upon yourself, and it was guidelines. Now they're arresting people. I just saw an article that 3 guys were arrested for going to a friend's apartment, for being inside a friend's mm-hmm. apartment in Steamboat. They were arrested and held
right,
in jail overnight.
That.
I mean, so it's gone from guidelines and people being decent people to threatening to arrest churchgoers who were sitting in their cars outside separately. I mean, it's getting totally crazy. So,
I think it's a credit to the American people that we, Jill, I think it's a credit to the American people that we have not had an incident yet. Let's think about this. These politicians and bureaucrats and interested parties have used their force to basically take away the livelihood of many people, have used their force to say that they have to stay in a certain area, that they cannot assemble with others, and rewarding people if they tattle on their neighbors. It is astonishing
right.
that people have remained as calm as they have.
Yes, it is. And thankfully, it's largely because they're waiting to get a paycheck. They've been getting a break on some things. That can't go on much longer at all. Now, the other thing that really gets my goat is the whole mask thing, telling us, no, you know, don't wear a mask. You're going to do more harm than good. I mean, that just made me crazy. And yet, now that they're thinking about reopening, everybody's going to have to wear some kind of a face cover or a mask if we're going to be able to reopen any areas of the country. Wow. Like you had to do a study to figure that out? No. They just changed their tune because of the shortage of supplies. Why do we have the shortage of supplies? Because a bunch of previous administrations and lawmakers and bureaucrats decided it was okay to ship everything over to China for the manufacturing of the world's medical equipment. I mean, good grief. Can I just plug something that people should really, because now it's starting to come out that this virus probably did come from a lab in Wuhan, whether it was the whether it was the P4 level, the highest level biotechnology virus lab, Wuhan University of Virology, or Wuhan Institute of Virology, or if it was some other lab, it probably did not come from the wet market. Which, wow, what a shocker! So, but there's a great. Yeah. There's a great documentary that was done by Epoch Times, E-P-O-C-H-T-I-M-E-S, Epoch Times. Just you can YouTube it. YouTube Epoch Times, and it's called the, let's see here, let me get the official title, Tracking Down the Origin of Wuhan Coronavirus. And it's amazing. It's really amazing. And it goes into, it tells you exactly who the person was that developed this virus. So that most likely did. And they go through some of the genetic structure of it. And it's really a well-done documentary. Anyway, just want to throw that out there for your
people. Okay, and Jill, one other thing. When we were remember, you and I were talking about this, I think on the podcast that we did together, the head of biomedics or whatever at Harvard, the head of that department, was actually arrested early in January of this year because he was working with that lab over in Wuhan and had not disclosed that. And so
He was working with the Wuhan University of Technology and was part of this 1,000 talents program in China that has been collecting and paying monstrous salaries and bonuses to scientists all over the world. So China has been congregating scientists from all over the world, and it's all being done, a bunch of it's being done under the table, like with this Harvard professor. He was working on nanotechnology on implanting tiny electrodes that can be implanted in different parts of the body. His specifically was in the brain. So you could plant an electrode in the brain, monitor what stimuli were going across the brain synapses, and obviously, therefore, the next step would be to be able to control activity in the brain. Now, you know, that could be used to control people with seizures or depression or something like that, potentially, or Parkinson's disease, that sort of thing, which would be wonderful. But I'm sorry, in the hands of China, it's frightening. So,
definitely. So, hey, another question on masks. I really don't want to wear a mask. I don't want to be forced to have to do that because... I'm not sure that I believe that it is necessary that everybody wear a mask. So what's your comments about that, Jill?
You know, we don't know enough about this. I would say a couple of things. I wear a mask when I go out, but I'm at higher risk. So and like I said, I've been wearing a mask on an airplane for years. It is uncomfortable. You know, if you have allergies, it's hard to blow your nose. You know, it's like if you have allergies, like mm-hmm. I do, it's like you're constantly lifting it up to blow your nose. You can't eat. You can't drink fluids. And you really can't exercise with a mask on because you just can't get enough oxygen. So there are certain things that you really kind of can't do with a mask. Now, and it may be that we have to do this for a little while, but then Jared Polis is saying yesterday, this is the new normal. Get ready for the new normal. Our lives will never be the same again after coronavirus. Well, okay, there are a couple of things about that. Number one, you know what? Keep doing this research and tell us where this thing really came from and what the genetic structure of this thing really is. Because if this is a bioengineered virus, then you better figure out what it's going to do over time. Because that's what bothers me. If this is bioengineered, then what genetic sequences have they inserted into this virus potentially? So that bugs me. so we really kind of don't know what the long-term behavior of this is. That being said, we're not. I don't feel like being like China, where I'm wearing a mask all over the place and social distancing forever and never shaking hands again or hugging people. I mean, that's baloney. We're not going to do that. It's baloney. So just allow us to make a decision based on, like with medicine, you know, it's informed consent. Let me know what the risks are. Let me know what the benefits are, and let me make a decision. Now, if it turns out that my behavior is going to impose on somebody else's ability to be healthy, then, you know, then you've got an argument there and a discussion needs to transpire. But if you don't feel like wearing a mask,
but at the
same time, if you have the virus and you could be shedding the virus, is it fair to you for you to be walking around without a mask and potentially infecting a bunch of other people? So to me,
well,
that's
those are going to be
we
questions.
Still
but
need more information. We need more information.
Okay. So you know what? Our time always goes so quickly, Jill. Now, you and I are going to record a podcast tomorrow, and then that will be highlighted in the newsletter, which goes out on Sunday. So I would highly recommend that people go and sign up for my newsletter on my website. And I forgot to do our funnies. So before we go to break, I know you're going to love this, Jill. Okay, ready? And we're going to, and I'm going to talk to Jason as well. It says, this COVID-19 Wuhan virus has turned us all into our dogs. We roam the house all day looking for food. We're told no if we get too close to strangers, and we get really, really excited about car rides.
Exactly. I heard one the other day. It was like, okay. It's trash day today. I wonder what I'll wear.
It's what today?
I have to take the trash out today. I wonder what I'll wear.
Yeah, exactly.
What an event.
Exactly. So, Joe Vecchio, we will have you back on. You're going to be on next Thursday. And then be sure and sign up for my newsletter. Boy, the pipes are having a tough time today. Sign up for my newsletter. Go to my website. And because we will be having our podcast in there as well. So, Jill, thanks so much.
Take care.
Okay. Jason McBride, how are you doing this morning?
I'm good. I was listening to Jill, and it sounds like she was saying over and over that models look good, but they're not very smart.
You are so good. That is so funny. So, hey, let's continue on. You are a senior VP with Presidential Wealth Management. You were on the show yesterday for segments 3 and 4, and one of our listeners had some questions about some stocks, and one of them was Macquarie, and you said you were going to get some information on that.
Well, yeah, I looked at Macquarie, and it's a little bit tough to figure out. They're involved in real estate. Sounds like they a lot, but maybe with like airports, gas distribution, power generation. So maybe a little bit specific the type of things they do. But yeah, the stock got just blasted, Kim, like a lot of others. It was trading at about $45 before this whole mess started. Came all the way down to $12.50 at the bottom in the middle of March. Now it's back up to about $25. But it makes it a little tough because they did withdraw their guidance. Also, they suspended their quarterly dividend, at least temporarily. Now, that may not mean that anything really awful's happening. They may just be saying, hey, we want to hold on to a little bit of cash here in case we need it until this thing blows by. So, Kim, yeah, honestly, I'd like to do a little bit more digging into that one before I would, you know, even give a guess, because it's got kind of a lot of interesting things along with it.
Okay. So we'll let you do more digging on that then. So thanks on that. And then we missed a couple of things that we were going to talk about yesterday. Would you highlight just one of those kind of from a retirement standpoint, what people can do?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, we were going to discuss, I know there's some alarmists out there. Well, a lot of people, Kim, are asking, are we going to have a recession? And what's the definition of that? Well, you know, the definition of a recession is that our GDP is negative for two quarters in a row, and it seems fairly likely that that's going to happen. I mean, this first quarter, probably the GDP's down. I mean, there's, you know, if we get reopened and things start going, there's a chance it wouldn't be down for the second quarter, but I think it's slim. So, yeah, I think it's likely that we're going to meet the definition of a recession, but it's hard for me to believe that that's not already kind of baked into the stock market prices. The market's not blind, right?
Right, right.
So,
and what about a depression?
Well, yeah, some alarmists say we're going to have a depression, and there isn't any precise measurement of a depression like there is with a recession. There is one old saying that says it's a recession if your neighbor loses his job, but when you lose your job, that's a depression.
Well, that's true. And interestingly enough, Jason, before we go to break, there's been some headlines. It looks like Boulder just had to furlough 737 employees because of that. So that's probably looking like a depression to some of those folks. And then also Littleton is starting to look at budget cuts as well. And, you know, so many of these municipalities rely on sales tax. And so, you know, we've always said that we'd like to have government get smaller, to be reduced. And so it looks like this COVID-19 is going to start to shave some of the budgets of some of these municipalities and states and counties, which I guess in a way I kind of think that is a good idea because government was getting way too big in my opinion. So, Jason, your final thought before we go to break?
Well, my final thought would be my definition of a depression will be when Trump wins again in November in the liberal media.
They would be in depression, that's true.
Yes, so, I think they would be.
So, Jason McBride, if people would like some help with, you know, just taking a look at their portfolios, you and your colleagues over at Presidential Wealth Management can do that. And your phone number is 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600.
So
have
correct.
A great day,
yep.
Jason.
Thank you, Kim.
I got it memorized. Okay, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Yeah, you're doing very good.
Okay. Talk to you tomorrow. We're going to go to break. When we come back, very excited to talk with retired Army Lieutenant Colonel Timothy Lupfer. He's written a very important book, Leadership Tough Love, Examining Leaders Through the Lens of Reality. And most interesting conversation. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
Water's Edge Winery and Bistro is celebrating 5 years in business and is now open Tuesday through Sunday, 3 p.m. to 8 p.m. Located near the northwest corner of Arapahoe and University, they are offering to-go food and wine to keep you fed and happy. Call 720-381-6663 to place our curbside to-go order, or stop in and grab your bottles and lunch or dinner. That's 720-381-6663, or follow Water's Edge Winery and Bistro Centennial on Facebook or Instagram for updates and specials.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I
welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. And sign up for our weekly newsletter because we're starting to include our podcasts in there. We're going to have three great podcasts there as well. I am so excited to have on the line with me retired Lieutenant Colonel Lieutenant Colonel Timothy Lupfer. He's a speaker, author, independent consultant, and leadership contrarian. He graduated first in his class at West Point and won a Rhodes Scholarship. His career in the Army included commanding a tank battalion in combat and serving as an assistant professor at West Point. In the 90s, he served as an executive at R.H. Macy and Company while the company emerged from bankruptcy, and then became a management consultant, retiring as a managing director of Deloitte Consulting in 2011. Timothy Lupfer, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Kim.
And you and I have a very good mutual friend who introduced us, and that is Ben Martin. And you were in the same class at West Point, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And pretty impressive. You were first in your class there, and you've written this really important book, Leadership, Tough Love, Examining Leaders Through the Lens of Reality. And if we ever had a time where we needed leadership in our lifetime, is right now with this COVID-19 thing. But there was a couple of chapters you recommended that I make sure that I read, and they are fascinating. And the first one was regarding charisma. And so unpack that a little bit for us, Tim.
Sure, Kim. Like a lot of words, I think the word charisma tends to be overused. And I feel we should always kind of step back and say, well, what does something really mean? Because charisma is from the Greek word meaning a gift. And what it really means is, and I think the best way to portray it is with an example, it's when somebody walks in the room and you've never met this person before, you don't even know who he or she is, but this person just grabs you and your judgment is suspended, your skepticism is suspended, and you basically say, wow, whatever this person says or whatever this person wants to do, I want to go along with it. That's what charisma really is. Too often we use the term today in retrospect. If we say somebody was really successful or something, we'll say, well, wasn't that person charismatic? And in most cases, that's not true. I actually say, and once again, I'm a bit of a contrarian, I say that charisma is a fairly rare thing. And I also say that in the majority of cases, when we've seen it, it's been disastrous. And so what I'm trying to say to people is, look, don't, as you develop as a leader or as we select the leaders that we need, don't look for this. Because for the vast majority of us, leadership is very, very hard work, and there will always be tension. And when we have somebody in a situation where the tension seems to evaporate, that could be trouble.
Okay, and let's kind of go through this chapter, how you started out. You talked about Plutarch and Truman. I hadn't really realized that Harry Truman was our last president that did not have a college education. However, I think people don't understand that people used to read great books, and in fact,
right.
Truman was referring to Plutarch's Lives on that. So talk a little bit about that, Tim.
Sure. Harry Truman, like a lot of people of that generation, would read the ancients. And this is actually a habit that goes way back, really pretty much from the Renaissance on, but unfortunately it's dropped off, I would say, in the past 50 years. But up until about 50 years ago, any educated or a self-educated person would have read a lot of the records of the ancients. And by that I mean the ancient Greeks and Romans, mostly. And Harry Truman, although he wasn't able to get a college degree, was a very well-educated, in terms of self-educated, man. And one of the things he recommended was the book by a Greek historian who lived during the Roman times, and that was Plutarch. And it's basically called Plutarch's Lives. And it's various stories of different people of both Greek, ancient Greek and Roman history, and he looks at their personalities and their character.
Okay, and talk a little bit more about this. I found it kind of fascinating. I probably can't say the name, but Alcibiades, is that right?
I think it's pronounced Alcibiades.
Okay.
And this was a young man in Athens during the time of the Peloponnesian War when Athens was fighting Sparta. It was also the time of Socrates. Actually, Alcibiades was one of the students of Socrates. And Alcibiades was an extremely handsome young man. He was a notorious womanizer. He threw great parties, but he seemed to have this ability, particularly in conversation, where he would just mesmerize people, and people would say, gee, whatever you say, man, I'm with you. And unfortunately, Alcibiades got involved in politics in Athens, and at the end of the day, he said, let's go invade Syracuse, the city on the island of Sicily, which turned out to be an utterly disastrous military expedition, and it's one of the main factors why Athens lost the war against Sparta. But the intriguing thing about Alcibiades was he would jump from place to place. He actually went over to the Spartans, the archenemy of Athens, and for some reason, and I think it was his charisma, the Spartans went along with him, and then he actually went over to the Persians, who were the archenemy of all the Greeks. And then eventually he came back to Athens, and people said, welcome back. And it's just incredible, and it seems everything he touched in terms of a major decision was a disaster, and yet he could still mesmerize people. And so I think that's a very important warning.
Well, and before we go to break, let's finish up this chapter. And regarding somebody that was very charismatic, as you had mentioned, somebody that you had met at West Point and who had actually heard Hitler speak in Vienna in 1938, I think. So tell us a little bit about that, Tim.
That's correct. Yes. Yes, when I taught at West Point, one afternoon one of the senior officers came by and said, Tim, I want to take you to meet somebody very important. And I went to meet Egon Weiss, who was the head librarian at West Point, and he was of the World War II generation. And I sat down and listened to Egon, and it's really one of the most important meetings I've ever had. And Egon explained that he was a teenager. He grew up as a Jew in Vienna, Austria, and he was a teenager in 1938 when Austria was absorbed into Hitler's Third Reich. And Hitler, triumphantly and largely to adoring crowds, was coming to Vienna to celebrate this Anschluss, this absorption of Austria into the Third Reich. And Egon's family, being Jewish, knew it was a bad thing, and they were getting ready to leave. But Egon persisted with his father and said, I've got to go hear this guy who's causing all this trouble. And his father finally relented, and Egon said, don't worry, I'll just blend into the crowd. Because I just have to hear what this bad guy is saying. And at this point in the story, going back now to West Point in the early 80s, Egon looked at me very intently, and I knew, even though I was a rockhead at the time, and I may still be, Egon was saying, hey, listen up, this is important. And Egon looked at me, and he said, and Hitler was the greatest orator I have ever heard. And that's always stuck with me because he was telling me that evil can be charismatic, that evil can sway people. And Hitler certainly had that ability. And so once again, I think it's a very distinct warning. For us as followers, we cannot suspend our judgment about our leaders. We always have to maintain a certain distance and a certain skepticism because that's the way we should choose, select, and deal with our leaders, not suspend judgment and go along with whatever they say.
Well, before we go to break, I have found this quote by Rudyard Kipling that we typically say every day on the show, where he says, I keep six honest serving men. They taught me all I knew. Their names are what and why and when and how and where and who. And my parents always said, now put on your thinking cap. And so I think that those things all together is kind of what you're saying here is an honest skepticism. And I've heard that about Hitler as well. I mean, you think about it, he was very, very evil, but he got people to follow him. So he was a leader, but not in a good way. So
no.
Let's go to break. I'm talking with Timothy Lufer. He is retired lieutenant colonel with the Army. Graduated West Point, first in his class, a very important book that he's written, Leadership, Tough Love, Examining Leaders Through the Lens of Reality. We're going to go to break, and I'll be right back.
Did you know Hooters wings can fly? That's right. Your favorite wings can be picked up for to-go and can even be delivered right to your doorstep. Take advantage of Hooters' delicious lunch specials, like our seaworthy Baja fish tacos, mouthwatering Western burger, or our new roasted wings. Lunch specials are available to go Monday through Friday from 11:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. Curbside service available. Place your order online at order.hooters.com. Get your wings to fly only at Hooters.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email Kim at KimMunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim at KimMunson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Check out my website. That is Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And sign up for our weekly newsletter. We're starting to include our new podcast, Sounding Off with Kim Munson. And we're going to have three important podcasts in there this week as well. On the line with me is retired Lieutenant Colonel Timothy Lufer. He served in the Army, and he's written this really important book, Leadership, Tough Love, Examining Leaders Through the Lens of Reality. And this other chapter that we want to talk about, Tim, is regarding when leadership matters most. And you'd mentioned here, you said the prevailing popular view is I'm going to be a heroic leader all the time. But the tough love reality is do the day-to-day hard work and become a capable leader, but also be able to identify the rare moment when you must stand out in a crisis. And so this first example that you gave in the book is interesting. So tell our listeners about that.
Well, thanks, Kim. And I got to say that I wrote that chapter over a year ago. And with the full benefit of hindsight, I wish I'd put a lot more effort into it because I certainly couldn't anticipate that we would have a national crisis that would be so broad and would affect everybody. But I still think there are some good nuggets in that chapter. And
there
yes, I give a couple of examples. But basically, I wrote it with the idea that because we live in such a prosperous and fairly predictable time, that we won't run into the need for heroic leadership very often. But oh boy, we need it now.
Mm-hmm.
And I give a couple of examples. One of them is a very heroic historical example on a large scale, and that is the siege of Malta in the mid-1500s. When the Ottoman Turks tried to take that island. And then the other one is a much more limited and narrow one involving a family in the middle of Kansas. So do you want me to talk a little bit about those two examples?
Yes, they're excellent, so please do.
Sure. Well, the first one is the Ottoman Turks in the mid-1500s were trying to basically take over the known world. And they were advancing into the Western Mediterranean under their great Sultan, Suleiman the Magnificent. And they landed about 40,000 people on the small island, soldiers, on the small island of Malta. And Malta was defended by a group of knights led by Jean Perisseau de Valette. And he had about 6,000 of his own soldiers. And yet, remarkably, they were able to hold the Turks off. The Ottoman Turks were not able to conquer the island, and eventually reinforcements came and the Turks had to leave. And it's one of the most amazing stories. Valette basically made very tough decisions. It was grim. I mean, no one could expect any quarter on either side. It was a very, very grim and nasty period. And yet it was as if he appeared everywhere, particularly where the fighting was the fiercest. And he was just an amazing leader in an incredible crisis. And he prevailed. And the capital of Malta is named Valletta in his honor. And so this is, I think, one of the great heroic examples from history of an outstanding leader.
And but you have one on a more personal level as well. Tell us about that.
Well, it is, because I try to make the point that this type of leadership is not just something on a large scale involving lots of people. We really need good leaders at every level, and even at the smallest level, the level of a family, it's important. And I tell the story of a family in the late 1930s on a farm in Kansas. And, you know, the Depression was a very tough time, especially for farmers. And basically this family, and it's a mother and father, and then their two children, a daughter and a son, are watching from their house, and all of a sudden a big storm comes up, and there is the wheat crop ready to be harvested. And it's a hailstorm, which is horrible for wheat. And basically the storm destroys the crop right there in about 10 minutes. And, you know, it's just soul-crushing for the family, because the daughter is actually going to college, and she doesn't know how she's going to continue, because there goes the year's income. And the younger son is crushed because he's getting ready to go to college. And, of course, he doesn't know where that's going to come from. And the father takes really all the strain, and very calmly he just says, look, here's what we need to do, and he gives direction to his wife, to his daughter, and to his son. And he's very calm, and he also says, it'll be all right. And that's really, I think, a great example of leadership, because he's basically absorbing the disruption, but he's providing the calm guidance. And as it turned out for this family, it did turn out all right, because a distant relative conveniently died and left a moderate inheritance that enabled both the daughter to continue in college and the son to start college. And, you know, just real quickly, the son is my father. Mm. And this was one of the great stories that he would tell about his father, and how his father would acted as a great leader in a time of supreme crisis for the family. And so the point is, these things can happen on a very localized, small basis, or they can be on a very big basis. But either way, this is what leaders have to do in a crisis. They have to step up.
Well, and then stepping up, we have probably about 3 minutes left on this, Tim Lupfer. You conclude with Winston Churchill in this particular chapter. So talk a little bit about Winston Churchill in World War II.
Well, here's Winston Churchill in 1940. He's just become the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. And Germany has just overrun France in 6 weeks. And it's a monumental disaster and a crisis. And so now it's just the United Kingdom against Nazi Germany. And Hitler first has to get his own cabinet aligned with him, which he does very skillfully. And then
you mean Churchill? Churchill has to get his...
Yes, I'm sorry. And he has to get his cabinet aligned, and then he talks to the House of Commons, and of course that is broadcast nationally. And we know about it now, certainly, but when we think about it, talk about a crisis, and yet, you know, he does, I think, four major things. First, he's calm. When you listen to his speeches, he's not excited. It's not like this thing has gotten the best of him. He's very direct. He says, this is going to be tough, and it's going to be a great struggle. But he also is forward-looking, and he says, I take up my task with buoyancy and hope, which is amazing. And then I think the fourth thing, which is what we really need right now, is he is able in his decisions to make trade-offs. And trade-offs are what you have to do as a leader in a crisis, and they're not fun, because they're never perfect. And yet, here's an example of a man who did those things, and I think it's a great example for us today.
You know, I see some of these things with these daily briefings that President Trump is giving. He seems to be exhibiting some of these things as well. What's your thoughts on that, Tim?
Well, I try to be very agnostic, you know, when it comes to politics. I'm seeing both the governor. I live in New York, so I see Governor Cuomo's things, you know, every day, and I do see President Trump's as well. And I think our leaders are trying to do their best. I haven't seen anybody really step up at the Churchillian level, but I'm hoping that will evolve over time, because we're going to hit now the trade-off period. We're going to have to get back to work, and it's going to be uncertain, and it's going to be risky. This is the test of all of the leaders, from the president to the governors, and I think that's what we've got to look at now. Will they be able to look us in the eye and tell us that we've got to make some tough trade-offs? And we'll see that in the next couple of weeks.
Okay. Timothy Lupfer, thank you so much. This is an important book, Leadership, Tough Love, Examining Leaders Through the Lens of Reality. I would highly recommend it. Greatly appreciate you being on the show today.
Thanks so much, Kim.
Okay, and our quote for today is from Dale Carnegie. He says, take a chance. All life is a chance. The man who goes the farthest is generally the one who is willing to do and to dare. So today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.
Young, like a new-